Felger and Mass.
Little sport dork orgy. So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
Sports and sports and sports.
Oh, yeah.
Sports in your face.
Oh, yeah.
Sports.
Felger and Mass.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Takes the snap, dropping back, feeling pressure, loads up and throws a long ball left for Robinson behind the defense. It's knocked by
it.
Jackson,
yes.
And intercepted by Harmon in the end zone.
Woo-hoo.
What a terrific recovery by the rookie J.C. Jackson and the reaction by Daron Harmon.
Boy, what body control by Harmon.
Daron Harmon with another fourth quarter interception and another in the end zone. He has 13 now career interceptions in the regular season, plus three in the playoffs, 11 of them in the fourth quarter, six of them in the final 2 minutes. He comes away with another pick in the end zone at the 4:41 mark here.
All right, hi everybody, welcome into the program. Felger and Maz on a re-entry Monday. There was the closing play, once again, Daron Harmon. Sosa just gave you the numbers, so I don't even need to ask, but how many times has he done that?
Yeah, on a deflection.
I mean, it's all the kid does. Anyway, Patriots win yesterday over the Minnesota Vikings, so that will be a topic of discussion today, but we're also going to do some other stuff. We'll go around the league with the Mike McCarthy firing in Green Bay. We got some Celtics thoughts off a big game by Gordon Hayward on Saturday against the Timberwolves. I want to do a little bit of the heavyweight boxing, so we'll get to that this hour as well. But your opening thoughts on the Patriots yesterday against Minnesota?
Good win. Good win. And the thing that makes me feel that way more than anything, obviously, is the defense. So, you know, the offense still had its issues, or some of them anyway, and I think that those are going to be ongoing because I don't feel great about Rob Gronkowski, and we'll get to more of that later. But defensively, I thought they were terrific. I mean, really, I thought they were terrific. And unlike the Kansas City game, I felt like, obviously, the Patriots were confusing Cousins, you know, disguising looks, all that sort of stuff. And then on top of it, they sustained it in the second half. I started to worry that at the end of the first half, it was starting to come apart there a little bit based on how that half ended, and they were able to sustain it. They confused him the whole game. I get some thoughts on the Vikings and their inability to adjust, which I'm sure we'll get to as well, but give the Patriots all the credit in the world. That's a good team that came in here. They beat him. They confused him. They held him to 10 points. I'm actually starting to feel better about the defense as a result.
I was going
to
say, you buying on the D?
I'm getting there. I'm not fully bought in yet because I think the Vikings have had their share of problems and their offensive line feels soft to me. When I say soft, I mean overall not very good. But nonetheless, the Patriots, I thought, dominated up front with their defensive line. They were able to confuse the Vikings. They got pressure on Cousins, which was a key to winning the game and holding them to 10. So it wasn't the Chiefs, it wasn't the Rams, but it's still a good team. And to me, one of their more impressive wins of the year.
Murray?
I think it's the most impressive win of the year, especially when it comes to the defense, and they set the tone with the first play of the game, where it's the incompletion to Dalvin Cook in the backfield, and Landon Roberts still lit him up. And I even thought it was real telling, too, that Belichick was extremely animated early. Like, after they get that quick three and out on that first drive, he's clapping his hands, he's all cranked up. It's like, oh, okay. Like, they're really setting a tone here, and I thought they did a hell of a job. I'm with Maz, and I think that the offense still has a ways to go. There's some of the play calling that still pisses me off. Rob Gronkowski still continues to look like a shell of himself. That's a concern still. All I really need. So I feel a lot better about the team after this game because I do think that that's now their signature win, especially defensively. I just want to see if they can do it on the road. Do it in a couple of weeks against Pittsburgh or hell, even next week against Miami. Then I'll really believe that this team actually can go back to the Super Bowl.
I mean, I think you said about just the way they look at home is just night and day.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, they're so engaged, so ready to go, physical. The first play of the game offensively. I think Gronkowski jumps off sides on the first play, but other than that, you know, they had schemed it up where they were just, I mean, you look at Minnesota and once again you say, are you guys ready to go? You're on the road at one of the best teams in the league. You got to be ready to go, and they're not. Or maybe that's just your emotional pitch, which was clearly there. And it's such a, departure, so different than what they look like in New York even, which they won.
Night and day.
Certainly Tennessee. So we still see that home road thing. So let's see them look that way on the road, and then maybe you're really cooking. But that's the first thing that stood out to me. Minnesota wasn't ready to go. They weren't ready to go. They weren't ready to play defense on their first series at all.
They were flat, I thought, most of the game.
They didn't cover anybody.
The holder was late running out on first field goal.
They landed for their first field goal, and where's the holder?
That was incredible.
The dude's got one job. And he's the punter, so it was fourth down. So yeah. You're on the field either way, bro. Like, on third down, you got to be ready.
Unless they go for it.
Right? I mean, for the most part, you're going to be up.
But at that point, they were moving backwards.
So it's really,
crying out loud.
I mean, it was just really just a, you know, an indication they weren't ready to go. But you were. You were. And I think that's a really good sign. You
know, sure it is.
Just the engagement of the Patriots and the energy that they brought. So, like, I think that's just a really good sign there.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, look, Brady made a comment, too, to the effect about how the defense looks at home versus the road. And it was sort of a passing reference, but I think he said something like, I don't think anybody's going to beat us here when they're playing the way they are. So he knows it. And maybe that's his way of saying, you know what, we need to get home field. And now the door is open for them. So, look, I told you, I have a high opinion of the Vikings. There's a lot of talent on that team. And they had a couple of guys that were banged up, whatever, but I think overall they're well coached, even though you wouldn't necessarily know it from some of the things you saw yesterday. And so I give the Patriots credit for the win.
I don't think they are well coached. And, Zimmer to me is a tough one because they don't do anything glaring. They're not really an overtly stupid team. They're less than the sum of their parts. So what is that? To me, that's coaching. And when you really think about it, yeah, they made the NFC title game last year, but that was a god-awful fluke. They should have lost at home in their first playoff game. So I think they're just an underachieving lot, and they have been, and Zimmer's got to be a part of that somehow. I don't watch them on a daily basis, but I mean, I just think that's clear. They're less than the sum of the parts. They should be better than they are.
Yeah, I still think he's a good coach. And again, if you compare him to Belichick, then everybody sucks because there is no peer for Belichick in that league. But against the rest of the league, I think the guy's got a half a clue. And again, I'm not judging that on yesterday. That challenge at the end of the half and then being able to get the ball back and get the 7 points, that was terrific. You never see teams do that to the Patriots, for crying out loud. He had the presence of mind to challenge, get the third down play. The Patriots go with the direct snap to James White. They end up giving the ball back, and the Vikings get on and get 7 points. It should have been 13-0 or 17-0 with the Patriots getting the ball.
At the least, they had completely outplayed Minnesota in that first half completely, and then it just all goes to hell like that. So I'm with you on that. I thought that challenge was great.
I mean, so I give them a lot of credit there. I thought they had half a clue, and you know, it was 10-10 late in the third quarter.
I know, but Minnesota should be much better offensively.
Agreed.
Much better offensively.
See, I put a lot of that on the coordinator.
I mean,
but anyway.
The Minnesota defense hung in there fine.
Sure.
I mean, 24 points at Gillette, that's, I would consider that.
It's a good day.
Yeah. I mean, not great, but you've given your team a chance to win if you've allowed 24 on defense at Gillette. I mean, you can blame the coordinator, but where's the head coach is in charge of the whole
sure,
thing.
Sure he is.
So, anyway, how do you feel about the Patriots' offense? And Jimmy, you may release the hounds, please, at 617-779-0985. How do you feel about the Patriots' offense?
Very, very, very conservative. Very conservative. And, to me, all it was checkdowns. And they both teams were doing the same thing, I thought, for the large majority of the game, which is checkdowns, throws to the backs, crossers underneath. Everything was short. Everything.
Crazy.
And the game didn't open up until they finally started throwing to Gordon on the outside. So
what do you think that was about?
I think it was concern for the Vikings up front or attacking their linebackers, like, you know, one or both. Maybe, you know, and it was probably some combination thereof, but I think that going in, they were a little too respectful of the Vikings.
I feel like there were, question. Are they protecting Brady?
Maybe.
I mean, and I don't even know, like,
yeah,
against,
maybe.
Like, against what? I mean, injury, he's not throwing the ball as well, so keep the game plan conservative. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know what the answer to that is. Protecting him against what, Felger?
It was apparent, though.
But the offense, and I'm not saying they were, but it had that whiff. It had the whiff, like a Blake Bortles game plan.
They weren't pushing the ball down.
Neither team was.
You're managing the quarterback. I feel the Minnesota thing is that Cousins is just afraid or that offense isn't as aggressive enough or something. The Patriots won. I don't know. If I didn't know better, I'd say they were managing the quarterback. Against what? I have no idea. But maybe it was just a game plan. But that's how it looked to me, Murray.
The only time Minnesota opened it up was when they scored. Like they got the ball back. Time was running down. Then all of a sudden they're throwing the ball down the field a little bit. Then it was working. But I thought that both teams were guilty. I told you, I went through and counted them because during the game, I'm watching it going, how many balls are going to the backs? Or
Edelman. I thought he was forcing it to Edelman way too much in that first half.
Totally. Or the balls to Hogan and Patterson on the first drive were short crossers underneath, right? I mean, the guys were within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage when they caught the balls. The Vikings didn't cover the flat. on both times. They caught the ball on the left side, if I remember it right, where Brady threw these little short outs. Yep. So, I, you know, to me, they were both doing the same thing over and over. I went through and counted. I counted 28 passes to the running backs. 28 targets.
Both teams combined.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
And that didn't count. That doesn't count those short crossers.
Yeah.
So effectively, those are the same thing. I mean, how many balls were thrown within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage?
And it's not like the weather was terrible. So it just, it was way too conservative, I thought, in that first half. I loved the first drive. That's as crisp as they've looked in a while. And I certainly wish they would use James Devlin more in short yardage situations. But beyond that, I found it odd that they didn't really try to push it downfield until the second half.
Well, the Devlin thing, I think that's an indictment on your other runners.
Yep.
I mean, you've got how many running backs you got on this roster? You got to hand it to Devlin. You know, so I still think Sony Michel's finding himself as a short yardage runner. So either way, we're off and running. We're going to start with Patriots. But again, we are going to get to the Celtics. We're going to get to the heavyweight fight coming up here in a little bit. It's a re-entry Monday, so whatever you want. 617-779-0985 to you right after this.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Something.
Come back and put it in my face.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now back to Felger and Mass.
They suck.
On Boston's home for sports.
Vikings deflect the zone as Brady takes the snap, drops back under pressure, slides up, throws down the middle, catch by Gordon at the 5, turns to the end zone! Touchdown Patriots! And number 5, 79 in the career of Tom Brady!
Feed it, man! The outside plays are there. Credit Brady for hanging in the pocket. There's a little pressure. He slides up, and then it's peekaboo on the backside to Josh Gordon, who continues his route across the formation in zone coverage, and he settles right in the middle. You can't stop that. If you block it, you can't stop it.
All right, what took him so long to go outside? What took him so long to go to Gordon? But either way, you got to love the way they're using Gordon now, Maz, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, because again, everything's in the middle of the field or, you know, sidelines. And when I say on the sidelines, I'm not talking about down the field. I'm talking outs or hitches, you know, 10 yards, 15 yards from the line of scrimmage max. That's it. There's just not, they are higher percentage plays. And so the first one, he breaks a tackle, runs down the field, picks up good yardage afterward. The second one, obviously, was the touchdown. And the third one, he almost got in the end zone. The last two games, 8 for 8. Now we're talking.
And much more in the clicks of the Patriots offense.
Now we're talking. Said, yes, now you've got to defend them. Right? It's not this 4 for 12 that we saw in the Tennessee game. Like, you know, Gordon's becoming a factor. These last two games, he has been a factor. And so, and this is all they ever needed out of him. They didn't need to chuck the ball down the field and get the 70-yard touchdown. They just need him to catch the ball for 15 and make someone make a tackle on him. So, to me, the game changed when they started including him in the offense.
All right, folks, your thoughts, as promised, right to you. Tom in Newton. Hi, Tom.
Hey, guys. I got two quick football points. The first one with the Patriots. How is it possible that the Patriots, when you think about it, they always go into these games that are billed as, you know, big games, big spots against the best teams. They always show up. They always look prepared. They always, you know, do a good job. Then they go into these games against the worst teams, and they look like ass and lose. Like, how is that? Second point, I think one of the major overlooked reasons why the league is up this year, why offense is up, scoring's up. If you think about it, this is the first season, as long as I can remember, that it's December, and none of the quarterbacks have gotten hurt. I know Jimmy G and Alex Smith are hurt, but, you know, they weren't going to be there in the end anyways. This is the first time in forever where it's like December and all the top quarterbacks are still playing. Thanks.
Okay. I think that's a factor. The assy games, it's bad competition. They've all been road games.
Road games. It's a road thing.
I think it's a road thing than a playing to competition thing.
That's what I feel, too. I mean, to me, it's got more to do with the next two will be on the road.
Because they played some ass at home, and they blew them out. Miami was a blowout.
Correct.
You know, Houston was assy to start the year. They blew them out. Those weren't competitive games. It's a road thing.
No, there's no question it's a road thing, which is why, as Murray said, the next two are going to tell you a lot.
Mike and Webster on Josh Gordon. Hi, Mark.
Hey,
What do you think of Josh Gordon? I mean, he was invisible in the first half. I thought those catches he made in the second half really ignited the offense for them. I mean, it was a different game after he made those, you know, the 20-yard catch and the touchdown catch. I thought it was a different offense after that.
Absolutely. No question. And I agree with Maz 100%. It's the context of how he's catching the ball and the way he's being used. They're not just throwing him jump balls 30 yards down the field. He's actually running routes. He diagnosed zone versus man on that touchdown. He found the soft spot in the middle of the zone, wide open, easy throw for Brady. That's the stuff that I get excited about. You know how I feel about this stuff. That super athletic jump through the gym, fast as blazes wide receiver, it just doesn't excite me. I don't care about that guy. I'm much more interested in a guy that can read man versus zone, find the soft spot, get wide open, make himself available for an easy pitch and catch. And that's what Gordon did on that touch. That excites me so much more than him jumping up in double coverage in the end zone on a 30-yard ball down the end zone or down the field. That's just how I've always felt that way about the receiver
position. Well, the other thing now is when he catches it, he's hard to bring down. I mean, that's been true from the beginning, I guess. But the last one he caught, man, he was getting spun. He spun around. He almost got into the end zone there.
So give him credit. They've managed him perfectly. I did not think he'd still be here. Still standing, still showing up to work, still being productive, still coming along in the offense. So that's exceeded my expectation. I had no expectation.
It gets scary because now they're invested.
Now they need him.
Right. Now they need him. Right. Now it gets scary.
All right. Alex in the car on Rob Kowski. What do you think of him, Alex?
I like you guys' plan. I feel like how they're using Gordon. However, how do you guys feel about how they're using Gronk? I don't know. That one pass right over the middle of the field, right over the top, just, I don't know. Every time they throw something like that, I feel like the man gets hurt. And I don't know if you guys watched the running play after, but he couldn't even block his man on the right side after that. I don't know if that's why they ran it to the left. But
okay, well, let me just stop you, Alex. Thanks for the call. Thoughts on Gronkowski?
Gronk is dead. We now have Robert James Gronkowski. Just another guy. Gronk is dead. Gronk, the beast. Gronk, uncoverable Gronk, the best weapon in the National Football League, is dead.
Gronk. It's over.
Robert James Gronkowski, just another guy.
Just another guy.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
I'm getting close to Murray on this. I mean, he did not look good yesterday, especially after he tweaked whatever he tweaked.
We have a big enough sample size now, guys. I know it's terrible to say, but it feels like that's the truth. With Gronk's dead. We have Robert James Gronkowski.
I get it.
Just a tight end.
I get it. Clark Kent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right, there you go. Peter Parker. Exactly right. Like, the costume is gone. He is who he is. I just don't know how it gets better now. You don't have any more buys until the playoffs, I guess. So maybe in the postseason you could get a little bump.
Like, he didn't play for a month, guys, and he still looks like a shell of himself.
I mean, he's gone, right? It took 1 week. 1 week for him to get right back to where he was. That's it. And so I'm with Murray. I don't think you can make him a focal part of the offense in terms of throwing to him. You want to use him as a decoy? Have a blast.
So that's still working. He was getting like double and triple covered when they were in the red zone, and and there was one that was forced to Edelman. It's like, okay, but all right. So he's still useful in that sense, but the Gronk is dead. Like, I don't think that he's going to be that player anymore.
Sam in West Boylston, what did you think of yesterday?
So I have 2 points, 30 seconds. First thing is just the line. I feel like the line offensively is the best line it's been in a long time. And I think that's really just because there's not really a weak link. Cannon kind of used to be a joke, but he's pretty solid. And I think Tooney is maybe the weak link, but he's pretty solid at best too. And the second thing I just want to say quickly is Beetle's a huge douche.
Okay. Pat's O-line. Was that your point, or were you in the Pat's D-line was the key to the game?
No, I said the D-line.
Pat's D-line was the key to the game.
I thought so. I mean, I thought they were able to get pressure on Cousins. And, you know, they were able to, obviously, they were stunting. But to me, that, and they were bringing guys in disguising. Some guys coming in, some guys going into coverage. You get the idea. The safeties were coming up. I read all the same stuff, and I was in the stadium yesterday anyway. So Chung and Harmon and McCourty were all coming up to the line of scrimmage. There's nobody back there, and I'm looking at it going, throw the ball deep. And then at the snap, it would change. And Cousins was confused. So there's no two ways about it. But I thought the Patriots' ability up front, Flowers, Guy, those guys in particular on the interior, to put pressure on Cousins, close the pocket a little bit, all of that really was one of the keys to the game because Cousins didn't have time to figure it out.
Okay, so Pat's offensive line, I think, has been good all year. I don't know why I don't think it was a standout performance yesterday, although they did run for a buck 60 as a team.
They did.
They averaged 4 yards a carry. It's a little skewed because Edelman had a couple carries that totaled 35 yards. I just think they've been good and steady all year. I mean, this has not been a lot of these years. It feels like the first month, month and a half, it's like, oh, what's going on with that offensive line? And then Dante Scarnecchia gets a hold of him. And by the end of the year, it's like, look at the progress the line has made. I feel like they've been a strength of the team from day one, really. I mean, for all the talk of the running backs, most of the running backs, whether it's Michelle, whether it's Patterson, whoever, they've been running through holes that you could drive a truck through. And I feel like that's been the case all season long. What do we got now? Derek in Foxborough. Back to Josh Gordon. Go ahead, Derek.
Yeah, I think they need to even get Josh Gordon even more involved in the offense. I mean, it can't all just be James White and Julian Edelman. I feel like at times Brady only looks to those two guys, and he doesn't look elsewhere, especially in the red zone. Like, why can't he be that big target in the red zone that they throw the jump ball to?
Okay, I'm not the jump ball guy. I hate the jump ball. God, I hate the jump ball. I just, even when you come down with it, it's like, that's not a play. That's not a play. You're just running a big guy to the pylon and chucking it up there. It doesn't interest me. I mean, it's low percentage, and I hate teams that do it. I hate the fade. Hate it. And I hate that thing where it's third down and there's press coverage, so the read says go over the top because the press coverage is there. No. Run a pick, run a rub, run a slant, run something else. I hate the ball over the top like that. I just hate it. It's just, that doesn't take anything. So, no, run a play, run a route, and try something a little more high percentage. So, no, I'm not chucking it to Josh Gordon at the back pylon just to do that. And I like it so much more the way they're using him the last couple weeks versus the week. What was the week? 12 targets, 4 catches in Tennessee? Just, chuck it down the field. Is that what you want, Derek?
3rd and 4. Remember that play? He just ran down the sideline. They whipped it up there.
Oh, I can't stand that.
The last 2 games, 8 for 8. So he says get Gordon more involved. I say no.
This is perfect.
To keep it right here.
Well, no. It was a little light yesterday. You shouldn't go a whole half before you throw it.
So that's true. Yesterday was 3 targets. The game before was 5. I'd say split the difference. 2 or 3 times a half.
Handful. Yeah. Half dozen, handful of targets. Unless he's just killing it, then fine, feed him. But I don't know if he's come like that far. He's a nice little piece. But I don't know. If they want to feed him on slants and comebackers and hitches and things like that. I'm not throwing it to him 12 times down the field like they did in Tennessee. That's ridiculous.
So the final catch yesterday to me was, I'd like to see more of him in the red zone too, using his size. But he basically ran a slant, broke a tackle, and almost spun his way into the end zone. They took him down at the 2-yard line. Then I think Devlin went in, if I remember right. So, you know, it feels like they still have trouble throwing in the red zone. So they ran in with Devlin yesterday, but the only touchdown they got passing was the 24-yarder where the play was outside the red zone.
Louie in Amesbury, quickly.
The pink area.
Hey, guys. Yeah, so listen, so I called to scream at you, but let me just say this first about Josh Gordon. I don't know if you saw the interview at the end of the game, but I don't know what kind of program he's working or who's mentoring him or what, but he was very well-spoken at the end of the game. You would never think that whatever kind of disease, whatever – you know, issues he's gone through. I mean, I was just super impressed with.
They've done a good job with him. They've done a good job. You give him credit.
No question about it. Yeah. So I'm listening to one of the other channels. Let me get to this. And I knew once I flipped on here, I'd listen to some BS. And here I hear, Mash, yeah, Minnesota was soft. They weren't ready yesterday. They were soft because they were intimidated by the Patriots offensively and defensively. Why aren't we talking about the Patriots defense, which played as good as any defense I've seen on TV in live all year? The Patriots defense looked like they finally are starting to come around, and we're talking about Minnesota playing soft.
Okay, Louis, wrap it back up and put it back in your pantalones now. Minnesota was flat. I'm sorry, or they didn't. It surprises me. Green Bay did it. You know, others have done it, but Green Bay and Minnesota stand out specifically. These are still the Patriots. That's Gillette Stadium. You've got to come out ready to go. Ready to go at a high pitch. Emotionally and you know, you've got to be dialed in and amped up and ready to go.
Focused.
And these teams aren't. I mean, they just aren't. They didn't cover anybody on the first series.
No, it was brutal.
Minnesota didn't cover anybody. And then offensively, their second drive, the holder's not out there. That's just a small little indication. They weren't really ready to go. I mean, to the level that you need to be to come in here and win a game.
They went 3-and-out to start the game, and the Patriots and Brady kept throwing open guys in the flat. Every single time. They weren't covering the area.
If that upsets you, Louie, I can't help you, man. That's your problem, not mine. That's just a fact. They weren't ready to go. You were. So you can just celebrate that. Here's Murray's update, and we're back with more.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
The kick is on its way. That kick is up. And it's no good. Marker down. Oh, marker down.
Offside steals.
The field goal
offside
try.
Again.
There's a block.
It's offside again.
And the Steelers block it, but it marks down.
They were offsides.
Here's the kick by Badgley. That kick is up. We got a marker down again.
Offside. Defense over 25. Penalty decline. Field goal's good.
And the game is over. Badgley kicks the game-winning field goal. The Steelers repeatedly going offside, and it made it easier and easier for the young man from Miami. And the Steelers lose a heartbreaker.
I'm sure you saw this. Pittsburgh Steelers jump off sides three straight times.
It was the same guy all three times. Well, there were on the last couple, especially there were like three or four guys for crying out loud.
They jump off sides on three straight game-winning field goal attempts by the San Diego Chargers yesterday, LA Chargers, and lose at home after being up 23-7.
Yeah, 23-7.
So I know this is so unfair to the Patriots, and it happens all the time, but I just can't help it. And just the futility of the league. No one can seem to keep it together. No one can figure it out like you have. No one can just keep their bleep together, hold their water. They can't. Whether it, you know, Minnesota, you look at me and say, well, how are they not better? All that talent, how are they not better? And you look at Pittsburgh, all the talent in the world, always have, it feels like. You know, or plenty of talent anyway, up 17 points, whatever that was, 23-7, at home against the LA Chargers, who are a nice team, but let's face it, the Chargers in the Northeast in December on the road on Sunday Night Football. You've got them 23-7, and you can't hold on to that?
You gotta, I mean, that should be a layup.
That Pittsburgh team, every time you look up, bad pick by Roethlisberger, punt return for a touchdown, jumping off like, they just can't figure it out.
And they gave up two-point conversions to end up 30-30. Right? Like,
they got a bum linebacker lined up with Keenan Allen, who went off last night. Like, so that's on that defensive coordinator there, too, who's a dope.
So, you may praise the Patriots and all of that, but you also look across the league, it's like, how come no one else can even figure it out a little bit?
Oh, no. And don't forget that the team that is the number one seed just had their running back go on the commissioner's list. They released him because of a video and an abuse incident or assault incident. Define it however you want with Kareem Hunt. It's like the seas are parting, man. They are parting, and Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are going to walk right through there. That's just the way it's going. It's going to end up falling in their lap, the number one seed. Because now they got wiggle room on Pittsburgh.
They got wiggle room. They can lose that game for the two seed, unless you're worried about Houston. But either way, so now it's Houston. It's like, do you almost give up on Pittsburgh? Like I do. I mean, not their talent. And if it all comes together with them, they're a dangerous team. If it all comes together, I would have no faith in their ability to go week to week to week playing smart, disciplined football and not making those big mistakes. Week before in Denver, fumble out of the back of the end zone. Interception in the end zone. Another fumble in the pink area as they're going in. It's like they cannot keep their crap together.
Can't get out of their own way.
It's amazing.
Yeah, they can't get out of their own way. And they still get a game at the Saints, too. So they get the Patriots and the Saints.
I feel like I'm done with Pittsburgh.
It feels that way.
They go, again, you. They play you at home and then on the road to New Orleans.
I mean, that was a killer. That was an absolute killer.
Their last 2 weeks. I guess Denver's playing better, but again, don't fumble out of the back of the end zone. Don't throw a pick in the end zone. Don't fumble at the 25 when you're going in for another score. They just cannot get out of their own way. Cannot. And that goes back to coaching. It feels like, you know, Pittsburgh's due for a little Mike McCarthyism there in Pittsburgh. That's another story. We'll get to McCarthy coming up in a little bit. But it's really hard. Or just look at the Packers. Like, they can't keep it together. We think it's bad here between the coach and the quarterback. Well, it's obviously not as bad as it could be because we see what that's like there. The whole league can't keep it together. They can't keep their crap together.
Oh, it's unbelievable. The ineptitude across the league, really. It's unbelievable. It is absolutely freaking unbelievable.
Yeah, but I still think that there are, that Houston team, granted, if they had to come here, I'd certainly like the Patriots' chances against them and even the Chargers, too. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, the stupidity is rampant throughout the league.
Oh, my God. How about David Wellesley on this very topic? David, what do you got?
Stole my thunder, gentlemen, but it was reminding me as we were watching the Vikings yesterday, it's how indicative in the league of the coaching, 95% of these coaches are morons. And so, you know, people keep saying the AFC runs through KC or Pittsburgh. Mike Tomlin has one brain cell. He is a certifiable moron, an idiot, a buffoon. And Andy Reid doesn't know how to manage time. He doesn't know how to use his timeouts. He's an idiot, too. So I think to myself, you know, for the sake of argument, if we have to play a team like Kansas City at Kansas City, does the buffoonery of head coach outweigh any home field advantage? And, you know, it's a very nice crutch to weigh on because, you know, obviously the Patriots have their own issues, but it's just, it is mind-boggling how idiotic they
mind-boggling.
Are. Mind-boggling.
Kansas City, to me, just feels so ripe. Like, they're just, it's teed up for them to lose their home divisional game. Like, I just feel like they're just the squad to lose that game.
I'm not convinced they're going to be the number one seed.
They might not be.
The next three games they have, Baltimore at home, Chargers at home, and then at Seattle. I could see them losing any one or a combination of those, for crying out loud. And look, I know that we dump on running backs, as generally speaking, on this program. Kareem Hunt's a loss for them. That is a major loss because he's one of the few backs in the league that you can keep out there for every down. You throw to and run with, and just makes it hard for them to defend because he's not as predictable as Spencer Ware or whoever else they're going to bring in, C.J. Anderson or anyone else. So, because Hunt has 7 receiving touchdowns this year on top of the 7 rushing ones. So, like, he's a guy in the backfield. You say, well, they can do either thing with him. How many backs are there really like that in the league?
Well, they put up 40 yesterday.
Against Oakland.
But then they give up 33.
Exactly. That's the other variable.
33 points to Oakland.
Brutal.
So they turn that into a game. So I have no, you know, I'm just.
And especially that last game of the year they have against Seattle, who's now played themselves into the NFC playoff picture. Like, that could be a huge game for Seattle.
If you think that's dissing the Patriots again, I can't help you. I'm sorry if you're that sensitive. But it's just, it's staggering. I mean, it really felt like it was Pittsburgh's year where they had it all going and figured it out, and here they go, and then they absolutely cannot get out of their own way.
23-7 at home, national TV against a team from Southern California.
The soft as puppy crap LA Superchargers. You've got to be kidding me. Seriously. But nope, that's, you know, here we go again.
And they gave him 3 cracks at the final field goal.
That's
3! Oh, it's unbelievable.
We'll take your football thoughts all day. It is a reentry Monday. I want to mix in some other stuff. We'll get to Gordon Hayward and the Celtics next hour coming up next. I just want a few minutes on that heavy fight on Saturday night. We'll do it right after these words in our long commercial-free segment.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
What can we say about Felger and Maz that you haven't already screamed in your car?
Sit on that one, bitch, and spin.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
There's a right cross that lands for Fury. Oh, no! Yeah, what left hook follow-up to it, which also landed, and then his head hit the canvas.
Incredible!
All right, Wilder Fury. Told you we'd talk about it today after discussing it on Friday, Saturday night. If you bought it, $75. Too much, too big of a number. I bought it. Billy Lanny, our fight doctor, comes in from behind the glass here in our Town for Tire Studios. You bought it?
I did.
Worth the money.
Absolutely.
Absolutely worth it. That finish was unbelievable.
I'm too much of a cheap bastard. Go ahead, Billy,
babe. I mean, even before the final knockdown in that round, it was an amazing fight. It was a heavyweight fight.
It was a good fight.
It was worth it.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you it was like an epic, like an all-timer, but that was a good quality heavyweight fight.
Entertaining.
It was an entertaining fight. And if you missed it, just real quick, Deontay Wilder, I felt, was down the whole fight.
Yep.
And had to really needed a knockout in the late rounds to win that thing. I thought he had lost most every round. On the Felger card, I had him losing, I mean, maybe winning one or two. He got a knockdown in the ninth, and that still wasn't enough, Billy. In the 12th, I thought he had to knock out Tyson Fury.
Yeah, he was still down.
I thought he needed a knockout, that if it went to the cards, he was done.
Yep.
Because I thought he was getting that, he was just getting outboxed. I didn't think he threw enough punches.
Absolutely not. You know what I thought about, too, is I think Maz mentioned it before about how Joshua's style is very clean, and that seemed what, like, Wilder was doing against Fury. You know what I mean? Wilder didn't seem like he was his normal crazy self out there willing to throw crazy punches, that he stood there as a boxer, like, didn't really, not that he didn't know what to do, but whatever his game plan was, it was him trying to be a polished boxer.
I was like, what are you doing, man? Throw.
Right. And we're used to seeing him throw haymakers.
Throw some punches. So I don't think Wilder threw enough. So anyway, he comes to the 12th down, and I think he needs a knockout. And wouldn't you know it, he knocks that big monster of a man on his ass with a legit shot. Now, he also put him down in the ninth with, I thought, was a glancing blow. I didn't.
Yeah, compared to that knockdown, the first knockdown wasn't anything.
The 12th, he clocked him.
Yeah.
And, folks, if you haven't seen it, I mean, Tyson Fury, 6'9", I don't know how much he weighs. He ballooned up to
250.
He ballooned over 300 before the fight, but he goes down on his back, eyes closed, eyes in the back of his head, and you're like, this thing's over. Done. Wilder did it.
Wilder thought it was over, too. Everybody thought it was over.
And this big fella gets up off his feet, and then not only finishes the round, I thought he outboxed
him. Well.
I thought outside of the knockout, he should have won the round, but you can't when you get a knockdown. It's usually a 10-8.
Yep.
And so it goes to Wilder. And, of course, because it's boxing, it gets a little dirty.
Yep.
What did you have on the Billy Lanny fight card?
I had it. The draw didn't surprise me. The one that surprised me out of all of them was the 115-110 for Wilder.
The judge
that had it as a win for Wilder was nuts. But I can see because, you say you give Wilder two rounds.
At 10-8.
Right. And then he won two of the first six rounds.
Yep.
So then he knocked him down for two rounds and gets those 2 points. So that makes it a draw. So you see a draw and that doesn't really shock
you. So to me, see, that's exactly what I had. I had Wilder with two rounds, and then if you give him the 10-8 on the knockdown rounds, I add it up, it's still 114-112 for Fury, which is exactly what one judge had.
Right.
One judge had it 114-112 for Fury. Another one had it 113-113. So, okay.
That's fine.
They debated one round, and that's, you're in the range there.
Right.
So one guy had it 114-112 for Fury. 113-113 was the second judge. And then Mexican judge Alejandro Rochin.
Sure.
Comes in 115-111 for Deontay Wilder.
Yeah, that was nuts. That's what bothered me more than anything. That was the one.
Oh my
the
God.
One bad thing about the whole night was that one judge that scored it like that.
Filthy.
Right, but that happened too in the first Canelo fight against Triple G. One judge scored it so far one-sided that it was just like, what are you doing here?
So I thought that was a joke. Fury should have won that fight.
Yep.
Fury should have won the fight.
Yep.
But Wilder still did. The only thing disappointed about Wilder is that he just didn't throw enough.
Right.
But
and what he threw, he missed.
And he missed a ton. They were all haymakers. They were all wide, but there weren't enough of them.
He missed a ton. And the thing is, too, I said it to Jimmy. I said, everybody loves Mayweather because he's defensive. He leans, he lands the clean punches. He does everything to what he needs to do to win the match. And I thought that's what Fury did. Fury didn't take any bad punches. Fury missed a lot of punches. Fury had landed a decent amount of punches. And just based on that, logic alone, he should have won the fight.
Fury should have won the fight. So I thought it was a bad decision. I'm a huge Deontay Wilder fan. I'm rooting for the guy, like you read about. Like, I love the guy. But I, take out my bias, and I thought Fury won the fight.
Yep.
But, boy, that finish, you don't see that very often, where you need a knockout in the last round to win the fight, and he knocks him out.
Got it.
And then the guy gets up.
Right.
I can't believe he got up. I still can't believe he got up.
I can't remember which commentator said it, but it was amazing. Like, the ref could have easily went over there, saw his eyes closed, and ended it.
So I'm glad you brought that
up. But counted, anyway.
The ref did a great job.
Yep.
In this day and age, Billy, when a guy goes down like that, like...
Just seeing how he hits the ground.
When the guy hits the ground like that, and he's flat out on his back, like,
right.
Flat on his back.
Eyes closed.
Eyes closed. The ref doesn't even get to six. He's
right.
Like, wave it off. That's
yep.
It. It's over.
Yep.
And the ref let him get up. He maybe gave him a little extra time.
Right.
You know, not only that was a good long 10 count, but then when he got up, he brought him over and talked to him and gave him enough time to recover. But excellent job. Excellent job by the ref there. Give him a gold star. Terrific job by not calling it there when Fury hit the ground. So either way, Maz, I still think we're on track here for what we want, which is a renewed heavyweight division.
So this judge, just because I was doing a little research on him, Alejandro Roshin or Roshan.
Yeah.
Born in Mexico, lives in Southern California, right?
I don't know.
So Fury's British.
Maz always does that, right? Like, I'm supposed to know where the guy
lives. Well, I'm sort of giving you facts as we go. Okay? So Fury's British, right?
Yes.
If Wilder loses that fight, what happens to Wilder Joshua?
Yeah, it's in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. So what are you going to do? Have two Brits fight across the pond? Well, nobody here will give a rat's ass.
Of course, it's filthy. They got to one of the judges.
Oh, please. It's as soiled as can be.
No question.
It's absolutely dirty. There's no two ways it's dirty.
I don't think we've ever questioned how dirty the sport
no,
is.
No. And that's part of the beauty of it.
Right.
There's a little bit of filth involved with the sport, and I think you got it there. You
yep.
got it because they had to keep Wilder undefeated there. If it was at all possible. Without the knockdown in the 12th, I don't think even this Mexican judge, he could not have with a straight face of given that fight to Wilder. I don't think. But the knockdown, now you had two knockdowns in the late rounds, and there's sort of plausible deniability. I'm surprised how many people, Billy, had it as close as they did. Like, I talked to Chris Mannix last night. You got the Chris Mannix card. He didn't think the result was that outrageous.
What do you think the decision? What did your card have?
I had Fury up by one. When it's like that, I don't really dispute, cards going either way. I think it was close enough that majority draw, split decision, whatever you want to call it, is okay in my book. And I hope the rematch happens in early 2019.
Okay, so it's clearly set up the rematch.
Oh, definitely. They've totally, this thing's totally set up for that now. And then after that, you'll get Wilder Joshua.
Well, so here, Mannix laid that out as well.
I'd like to see another Fury fight. I mean, these guys have unfinished business. Let's pick it up like it's round 13 and see if we can settle the score between those two. Take you inside for a second, Mike. I mean, Anthony Joshua doesn't want the Wilder fight in early 2019. Rather, his promoter doesn't want the Wilder fight in early 2019. This creates an easy answer for everybody. You do Anthony Joshua against, say, a Dillian White, who's going to fight on December 22nd in early 2019. That's big business in the UK. You have Fury against Wilder in the UK in early 2019. And the winner of those two fights, hopefully, will meet in the ring in September.
Okay, so there it is. You've laid out the semifinals into the finals, and that's how you get Wilder Joshua.
Oh, yeah, no, it's like the college football playoff. You get the final four paired up now.
But Wilder's got to get past Fury. I don't love his chances.
Right, but what if either of those guys get knocked out? Then you suck, like, the way I look at it, like 0-3. Everybody wanted Sox Cubs, but we got Yankees Marlins.
Yes.
So you let these guys do it like tournament style, like this winner fights this winner. And if somebody gets knocked out, like, what do you do? So just like book the fights ASAP.
Yeah, Wilder can't fight Joshua now, though, without fighting Fury again.
Oh, yeah, no, I want to rematch.
He can't. He's got to fight him first now after that.
And Fury's got to be favored in this fight. I mean, he outboxed him, clearly
outboxed
him in this fight.
Yep.
So unless Fury goes off the deep end again, has some personal problems or, whatever, and he's had them. If he's in shape and engaged and sober, I don't know if Wilder gets past him. It was a miracle that he got the split draw as it was.
Right.
So anyway, it was a good night. And wasn't it great? I'm going to sit here and tell you it was the greatest night ever, or if it was worth your 75 or not. But I do feel like the heavyweights are back, Billy.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the division is back. There's guys worth investing in. The fights are, for the most part, quality.
Right.
Saturday was legit entertainment. That 12th round was worth it in and of itself, just
right.
The 12th round.
Or even if you didn't get that knockdown in the 12th round, everything leading up to it was still a solid, solid match.
Okay, so anyway, there's your boxing minute, which I promise. You can weigh in on that if you want, 617-779-0985. We're mostly Patriots-Vikings, some stuff around the league. We'll get to the Celtics next hour as well. All of it with your calls right after Murray's 90-second update here, no commercials.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.